welcome again to Wellness Deconstructed. I'm your host, Zia Jaffer, and today we're talking about something that has really helped me on my wellness journey. You know when you're in pain, like you have an inexplainable back pain or knee pain, and you go to a physiotherapist or a doctor and they give you a topical solution and the pain goes away for a bit, and then a few days later you're like, oh my God, I'm in pain again, and you feel old, but you don't know what to do, what the problem is. I went through the same thing postpartum and finally found our guest today. And she specializes in posture therapy and is the creator of Posture 360 Method. She helps purpose-driven humans achieve body freedom. She wants to help people worry less about their body and focus more on living a fulfilling, active, and healthy life without pain, interruption, or signs of aging. Her method is a framework of corrective exercise and functional movement that helps clients first understand and then fix the root cause of their body dysfunctions. Unlike modern day medicine or pain management, she doesn't just address the symptom location or diagnosis of the issue. She gets to the root cause once and for all. And that is none other than Rachna. Welcome, Rachna.
Thank you, Zia.
It's so nice to have you here because I'm so passionate about fixing my body. Like, I've always been like, I need to fix my body, but never knew what to do until I met you. And it's such a pleasure to be able to have you on this platform to spread that information that you have and not many people are aware of. So why don't we start with what is posture therapy?
I've been through so many iterations in my head, in the mirror, when I speak to people. It's like that bar stool moment, and everyone tells you have to have your elevator pitch. And the best way I can describe it is bringing your body into alignment with gravity. It's like, you know, we have, in spirituality, we have yin and yang. In Ayurveda, we have the balance. In life, we have positive, negative, ups, downs. And in the body, we have right side, left side, masculine, feminine, and sides of the body. And pretty much all you're doing is bringing your body into balance and finding your center, your sweet spot. And from there, physiologically, as well as spiritually, everything just works on this path of least resistance. And it might sound like a mouthful, it might not ever be perfect. And people will always, the first thing when I say I'm a posture therapist, you kind of see people just kind of sit up straight and but that's actually not what it's about. We don't want to be perfect, rigid humans. We want to be marshmallow type humans where we're just soft and malleable and almost like childlike. And that's pretty much what it's about.
Yeah. And like I said, fixing my body, you helped me realize that there is actually nothing to fix. It's actually aligning your body to its natural state, and which whatever state that is, it doesn't have to be straight or arched out or sitting straight up, you know. You said that you created the Posture 360 Method, and I've experienced it. So why don't you tell us what is the Posture 360 Method and how did it come about?
Sure. So 360, again, for me is this way of encapsulating a holistic and an inside out kind of approach. But the 3, the 6, and the 0, they have, for me, I used to be a lawyer, so I'm very much about, how can I create something that's very simple, but in a framework that people can understand it, and that I don't have to keep switching and changing something, and I can just find what works. So the 3 is the 3 elements of what I found through 15 years of chronic pain as an athlete, as somebody who's passionate about movement, as somebody who wanted to do sports medicine at university. I couldn't find answers. I would go to spine specialists, I would go to physios, chiropractors, and usually what would happen is they would treat the same thing. If I complained about a knee or a back or foot pain, that's the site to which they would go. And that's what they're trained to do. And it was only until I found corrective exercise is when I started to understand the difference between location symptom-based medicine versus root cause medicine. So the 3 is 3 elements that I found really changed my mechanics and my movement, which is posture and corrective exercise, functional movement, which is neurocentric functional movement, which means you use your eyes, you use your perception, you use the feeling of having the ground underneath you. And it's this idea of you want to grow eyes in the back of your head. Because if you look at the periphery of our eyes, it's only 45 degrees to the right and the left. And that's limiting if you're a human being who needs to work in all 360 directions. Okay, mm-hmm. So we have posture corrective exercise, we have functional movement. And last but not least is when you've reset your joints and you've reworked muscles to work in like a nice succinct sort of puppet-like motion where everything works evenly both sides and all in all directions, you want those muscles to memorize how that happens. And for me, that comes from stability and strength. And it's not the strength training that we see like in the sort of traditional or the conventional sense. It's your body strength. So think calisthenics, handstands, functional strength training. Mm-hmm. And those are the three elements that I've put together first and foremost. And I pretty much come up with a way in which I can help people fix something, memorize how to do it themselves, and then just keep doing it. So we do that on repetition. And the six principles that I've kind of come back to every time when I'm teaching people is, one, never guess, always assess. Because if you're not really assessing why and where the issues are and the issues that are causing the imbalance, you're not really getting to the sort of the real root cause. Mm-hmm. The second is use what God gave you. And this is the concept of trying to grow eyes in the back of your head. Because if you can do that, you'll see that your back of the body works equally just the same way as the front body, but also has its significant role for you as a human being. And that's where the sort of balance aspects come in. The third is no pain, more gain. Mm-hmm. And I'll say that, no pain, more gain. And we live in this lifestyle where we're constantly taught to do, we're constantly taught to do more, achieve more. I mean, think about kids at school these days, like their schedules are just jam-packed. They wake up at 6, they still got homework to do at 6 p.m. And as adults, we're chasing that dream. And in the wellness sense and in the fitness sense, I think it's this mentality of, if you don't do more, you're not going to get to where you want to be. And it's a whole sort of minefield of cutting out noise. And the way I think I simplify that is by telling people that when you're in no pain, you have more gain, right? And then the fourth is unlearning. And for me, I think this is also a really big concept that we as humans need to start embracing, because we're filled with so many shoulds, coulds, woulds, ifs, buts, that it's almost like we're trying to follow somebody else's to-do list and somebody else's protocol.
Yeah.
Whereas every single human being is different. You and I might be female, you might be a mom, I'm not a mom, or you know, your strength capabilities are different to mine, your body structure is different to mine, your environment, your culture, your genes are different to mine. So by that token, you can pretty much never be the same as me. I have a twin brother and we are completely chalk and cheese, not just in our habits, but like our body build, right? So I'm always saying to people, until you start to unlearn your hardwiring and your subconscious patterns, you'll never really discover what works for you. Mm-hmm. So it's that trusting a specific framework that you can explore and discover yourself that will get you past that sort of stumbling block. The fifth is, we don't do cookie cutter. We do not subscribe or prescribe things that are simply just for somebody else and tell you to follow the same thing. And often I get this question is like, okay, I run a group program. So most people would think like everyone in the group program is still following the same sort of thing. And by definition, it could be cookie cutter. But again, what we do different is we assess every single individual in the group. And by doing that, we tailor make the homework so that it's sequentially done in a way that your body is being given what it needs to fix itself. Not what I need, not what somebody else needs. The homework content can stay the same. The routines can stay the same, but how you do them will be different based on your balance and your body capabilities. And that's pretty much the six elements of what, you know, make my framework or this method a little bit unique. And the zero is that 0 degrees of resistance, zero degrees of, you know, separation, 0 degrees of just bringing yourself into that gravitational sort of sweet spot. And that's kind of what it is in
That's
summary.
Amazing. Yeah. That's so good. So you like have like 3, 6, and 0. Each number has its meaning, but also together it's like a holistic approach, yes, that you have given to posture therapy. That's amazing. I have so many questions already from everything that you said.
Usually that's kind of like what that's the response I got.
Yeah, it's beautiful, and I feel like those six principles should be like our life principles, yeah, you know, because and one of the reasons I started the podcast is because of one of your principles, and that is there's no cookie cutter approach.
Yes.
That there is no one size fits all, mm-hmm, and there is not one thing you can do that can help everything in your life or that can, yeah, fix everything, yeah, in your life, you know?
And as a mother, I think you'll probably relate to that the most.
Yeah, it is. It is super relatable. I'm forgetting my questions because you've given me so many information, so much information. So one of the questions I had was, I heard you say like bringing your body into balance, mm-hmm, and make your joints function in a way more like puppet-like, right? So why don't you tell us like how our body is connected via chain? Like I know you've explained me how, mm-hmm, it's a chain from bottom to up, but tell, yeah, me more about that.
So if you think about a human being, from say in utero into early development stage, their first point of contact with this world is through the earth, right? So, mm-hmm, like when babies are born, they can't sit up straight because basically the secondary structures in their body, which is the lumbar spine and the cervical spine, they're not developed until, mm-hmm, after birth. And that forces a child by nature to be more towards the earth naturally. That's, mm-hmm, just how the body is designed. And because of that, your first point of contact with the earth when a child starts to walk is through your feet. Mm. And so as you develop height, as you develop bone structure, as a child's cartilage starts to become actual bones, and they start to basically have a vestibular relationship with, mm-hmm, their body and, you know, the awareness of space that their body has on earth, balance and proprioception starts to become a thing that they have to have a relationship with, right? Yeah. Because that's how you move. That's how, if you look left, right, up, down, like those are things that trigger like movement, mm-hmm, okay? And then physiologically, your joints are designed to almost sit in a sort of perpendicular position to one another. So we have what we call load joints in posture therapy, which is your ankles, your knees, your hips, and your shoulders. But for me, I also think about the jaw, because head position in modern day world is such a big thing that actually, if you look at people's cervical spine, it has a big connection with their feet, and it sways their vestibular balance and also generally their functional movement. So this whole connection is not about what it looks like. I mean, we live in Africa, for instance, and there's so many people who, I take the mama bogas, you know, from the shags, and you're driving up the road and they have really severe sort of stenosis from carrying heavy, you know, loads on their back, the wood, the firewood, etc. But functionally, if you look at them, they're fulfilling their role in everyday life. And they're probably not even aware that their body's in pain or limited in any way, because that's what's become normal for them. So when we look at modern day humans who come to us and say, I have a limitation, I have pain, I have this discomfort, I have something, there is absolutely no logic if we're simply looking at the location. Mm. Because what we have to look at is, what's the output of that deficiency? What's the output of that dysfunction? So at the moment, everyone's playing paddle,
yeah,
and tennis elbow and shoulder rotator cuff problems. That it's becoming like something I hear about every single day. And the first thing I'm looking at is their feet. The first thing I'm trying to notice is if they have any kind of rotational dysfunction. For some people, I'm even checking their eyesight, because people don't understand that if you grow bias in your eyesight to one side, it's going to create a deficiency in the functional movement on the other side of your body. So this chain aspect is not just about looking at someone's physical body. It's also about understanding people's personalities. It's about understanding what God gave you, which is your sight, your taste, your smell, all of the elements that help you function as a human being, right? And for me, this is where it becomes really cool but really interesting, because these are not the things that when you go see a specialist, you're being assessed for.
Yeah.
And I only recently learned the real sort of chain by bringing in like eyesight, vestibular balance, brain health into the whole sort of assessment phase of when I look at people. And for me, when I get stuck with a client who I was just kind of physically sort of assessing, for me, the answers have come from understanding things like gum health, eyesight problems, hearing problems, any kind of birth traumas, for instance, that may have happened. Like if a baby was suctioned and then that baby becomes an adult, I'm noticing like disparities in the pelvis, or, you know, their femur bones or their shin bones, they actually start to stay on into their adult lives. In a nutshell, it's not just always what meets the eye, and it's not just, you know, a physical assessment. It's not about what looks wrong. And, you know, that's actually not what I'm looking for. What I'm looking for is what doesn't make sense. Mm. Is why when this person tries to do something, they can't. And what looks like it's the struggle. And the thing that's made me really develop my skill is when you look a bit deeper and when you meet this client where they're at. Because that discovery of a birth trauma, as an example, it's not gonna come straight off the bat. It's not gonna come in your first session. It's not gonna come, sometimes it's not even forthcoming. So for instance, when I see male clients versus female clients, it's a very different approach, because if I just kind of go in there and start asking all these deep and meaningful questions, people kind of retract. And I feel like that then doesn't allow me to guide them to getting to their solution. Because at the end, it's not my solution. I'm simply using my eyes, I'm using my gifts, I'm using my skills to help them get past whatever it is that's kind of holding them back. And that's the chain. It's a physical assessment, it's a physical element, there's inner elements, there's behavioral elements, there's mindset elements, there's habitual elements, and there's so much more under the layers, from birth into early teens, into young adult, you know, life, and then so on and so forth.
Yeah, I love that that you have a very, like, not a cookie cutter, very individualistic approach, understanding each body type differently. And that's something I learned in Ayurveda. Until then, I was just like following what everybody was saying. Okay, this is what you need to do. This is what you need to do. But studying Ayurveda helped me understand, like, every body is different.
Yeah.
And also, like, based on what you said, like, how the mama bhogas are compensating with, like, a hunch. Their body is compensating with the hunch, but there's something else that is dysfunctioning as a result of that. And for me as a mom, I was carrying my child on one side, and that's why I was compensating on the other parts of my body, because my body was trying to, like, carry that weight on one side, and the other part was suffering or, like, not being active at all, right? Yeah. So it's very interesting that we all need to understand that and approach each of our bodies different way, and not follow like a diet or like go ham in the gym because everyone's doing that and losing weight like that, right? Yeah.
Sometimes I feel like we should just walk around life at the moment with like, you know, those monkeys that kind of go, see no evil, hear no evil, see no evil, speak no evil, because there's just so much noise out there. You know, I think cold water immersion is such a great example.
Oh my God,
example.
Yeah, I talked about that.
And I do them, but not on a daily. It's not forced. And, you know, I don't have thyroid issues. I don't have ADHD. I don't have any underlying issues that kind of would make somebody think, hang on for a second, why would I need cold water if my body's already in, say, fight or flight, or is already in a situation where it's kind of hyper, rather than in some kind of neutral position, right? So we're just following. We're just told the next fad is cold water. We're told, you know, gluten-free. We're told don't eat ghee. We're told all of these things. And I'm like, but my grandparents, who both lived past 90, they didn't do
everything.
They look at us sometimes, they're like, what is all of this? You know, like they just think it's too much. Supplements, another really good example. My granddad, who's 94, has never taken supplements. And if you look at their bone health, I'm telling you, like, you don't see quivers, you don't see shakes, you don't see bones that are deteriorating. Yeah. And for me, the logic is what you put in is what you'll get out by way of food, nourishment, sleep, the mindset you follow and the things that you take into your body, how you move your body. Those are the things for me that matter.
Yeah, and my principle is that whatever you put in your body or on your body or surround yourself, your body with, is how your body will react. So just like how you said, it makes so much sense in so many different aspects, yeah. Right? And I love that you said, like, when we see our parents and, like, our grandparents, they have no issues. Like, they're so strong. And, like, even when I'm doing my different practices, they're like, what? Like, we never did any of these things. And look how good we are. But I feel like it's also this modern day age demands on our, and how, and that the impact of that on our bodies.
Yeah.
Because in when they were younger, they used to like squat on the floor and sweep and do like those chucky pise.
Yeah,
I don't know what it's called in English.
But Gunti, like, in Gujarati, like, so my grandma, she used to grind the unga in,
yeah, the
Gunti,
wheat,
right?
And make flour out of it, you know.
And I just think like that was functional movement.
Exactly.
She sat in this cross-legged position for like 5-6 hours in a day.
Yeah.
She's out in the garden, she's doing things, and I'm like, that's functional.
Yeah.
This is integrating daily movement into your daily life. Mm-hmm. It's not different.
Yeah.
I always say to people, if you find a way in which you're not just doing 1 hour of fitness and exercise, and you find a way to integrate movement into 9 hours of your life, you will see how different your body, your lifestyle, your wellness, your mindset, your mental health starts to change.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're not making it something different.
Yeah.
And I think this disconnect where people are like, okay, in my daily schedule, I have to go 1 hour and do this. Mm. Or I have to do, you know, we can meditate in the car. You think about it. We can meditate while we're in the garden. We can meditate even this conversation. I have to be aware that when you're talking, when you're asking me a question, I'm listening.
Mm.
And that's it's something that comes from, I think, tuning into yourself and being aligned with, you're okay with where you're at. You don't have to speak louder. You don't have to say louder. You don't have to be louder.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't have to dilute yourself either, right? There's this grace and prominence and coming from something that's so grounded that it just takes up space wherever it goes.
I love that. I love that. And what's coming up for me is something that comes up every time I coach a mom, and that's that feeling that I'm not enough.
Mm.
And that comes from that disconnection,
yeah,
from what you are, from what you are feeling pressured to be and who you really are. And working on posture therapy has actually helped me in that sense, where you connect back to your body.
Yes.
You connect back to who you really are and be like, hey, this is who I am. I'm enough the way I am. And that helps your mental health as well, or mental state of mind,
yeah,
as well. As like, I know who I am, that these are my strengths, these are my weaknesses that I can work to get out of, or work through them.
Yeah. And embracing them.
Yes.
And not being afraid that you're in
That's
this
true.
Place where you're challenged, or, you know, feeling like things aren't quite aligned, and learning that that's very much part of a journey.
Yeah.
But for me, I think with mothers, it's the system. If you think about the system, and I say, from the time that you start hosting is, you know, you discover that you're pregnant, and actually the hosting for me starts by just the intention of wanting to be a mother, right?
Yeah.
Where in the system do you actually find some kind of sanctity where nothing is wrong?
Mm-hmm.
So like your first, you know, just the fact that you say out loud, I'm trying for children, all of a sudden you get flooded with all this do's, shoulds, don'ts, do this, legs up, I don't know.
Yeah.
Then you go, you say you discover you're pregnant, then you go into the doctor's clinic, and everything's about what you shouldn't be doing. No high intensity, be careful, don't tell people. You know, all of a sudden you're like in this box. And I think that's the problem, is we're not allowed to, you know, we're not allowing mothers to just flourish in their righteous space of discovery. And then everything in hosting period is about you, but you as the host, not you as an individual. After you've given birth, it's about the baby. And you just get booted to the mm-hmm. side, and you then get put into this like protocol schedule where at 16 weeks you have to go get a scan, you get ticked, all your boxes get ticked, or one gets X'd and a few get X'd, and then that's where you lose yourself. Because first of all, the guidance on this journey, I feel like, is a really big missing piece of this entire wellness circle.
It is.
But the changes physiologically, mentally, hormonally, energetically, on a demand of your role as a woman, how much it changes is enormous. But yet, it's so diminished as something that's so normal, so part and parcel. The level at which your pelvis changes, the rate at which that causes changes up the spine, your shoulders, your neck, people really don't understand the vastness of these changes. And if you've got dysfunctions leading up to that period of your life, they are not disappearing. They're not miraculously just going to go away. They are likely going to be exacerbated. Yeah. They are likely going to be carried over. And all of a sudden, then you have a toddler and you're like, when do I get to fix or even start to sit and discover where I'm supposed to start? Forget even the problems. Forget even the fixing part. It's when do I just get to sit and be and listen and go a little bit inwards where I can even start relating to myself? And for me, that's the biggest missing piece. And that's why I think when we talk about posture, when I talk about the unlearning, the one thing I often have to help people through is this concept of relaxing more than doing. And you know this from your posture exercises. You know, abdominal strength, core strength is such a big thing at the moment. And I just think when we have a marshmallow or a balloon, you don't see that thing being rigid. It's very malleable. Mm-hmm. It can move in so many different directions, but it's on demand. And our body is very much the same. You know, for physiological relation, I can say the bladder. We don't sit here squeezing our bladder, anticipating needing a wee 24/7. And your abdominals are exactly the same. So why and how the world is so fixated on strengthening the core, it seems very counterintuitive. I can understand why they say it and how they're sort of initiating people or helping people do it. But for me, I think it has to come from a place where it's ready to do what you want it to do. And if you're strengthening from that mindset, you're going to probably set yourself up for success. But if you have underlying dysfunctions and you're strengthening on top of that, it's almost like having a table with wonky legs and then just loading the table with all sorts of things on top. Eventually, something's going to crack. And that's kind of where I say for women, men, sports, athletes, children, your fundamentals really, really matter. If you nail the fundamentals of, okay, what are my feet supposed to be doing for me? How do I actually work my feet? And what's the connection of my feet to my spine and my shoulders? And how do my shoulders help me, even if I'm a mom or, you know, somebody who plays racket sport? How am I going to tackle these parts of my body so that they work for me, not against me? Mm-hmm. And how then can I go into a mindset of, because sometimes we need conventional medicine. How can I go into this conventional medicine arena knowing what I already know and taking from them what I need? And not constantly being in this mindset of your something is always wrong, something is always broken, something is always needing a fix. You're not broken. Mm. You could just be bent, but you're not broken. Broken is very obvious. And most of the people that I see, they are not broken. They just need to be guided.
What I wanted to know is, I love what you said, that it's like a broken table that you're just adding load on, right? And I feel like in this day and age, the demands from our body are so different than the functional movements that the olden days people used to do, right? And we don't have those functional movements. So what are the main challenges related to posture that you see in your clients, like day to day, or like what are the baseline ones that you've noticed?
So because of modern day living, but also I give you an example because you have kids, it could be very relatable to most people. If we go into an office or if we go into a classroom, what do we see? We see everybody usually with the same desk, the same chair, and the same computer. By that token, you're assuming that everybody sat at that desk, in that chair, at that computer is the same body height, same body shape, like same everything. We get ergonomic sort of elements. The chair can be sort of changed in height and so on and so forth. But we're simply putting ourselves in a box by that token, right? And in schools, we have children, even if they're in the same class, their height and their growth percentile is totally different to somebody else.
Mm.
So if we're putting everybody at the same desk, same chair, for me, this is the start of the problem.
Mm.
And it also goes back to our household where, I mean, I remember as kids, mealtimes were like together. You didn't have a choice. Even if you were moody, you didn't want to eat, you sat at the table and you ate what was in front of you. If you didn't feel like eating it, that was your choice.
See.
And dining chairs, also at a table, they're designed the same. But if I wanted to kneel on a chair, if I wanted to sit with my feet up on a chair, we're kind of told that that's not normal, right? We don't get the freedom to sit, to be, and to explore our own bodies because we are part of conventional society.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, this is the start of the problem. You take cars, if you take all of these things that we have to like kind of be around, cooking even. If you take somebody who's 6 foot tall and they have a countertop that's the height of somebody who's 5 foot 3, their mechanic is going to change. And yeah. Those are the things they're having to do every single day. And so habitually, the clients that I see, their problems have not been sort of just because they did something wrong in sport or they had a baby. These things are actually a culmination and a collection of things that have happened over the last 10, 20, 30, 40 years.
Mm.
And then all of a sudden, I'm presenting them with this thought process and this framework and this way of doing things that's completely different, that I wish could turn their lives around in, you know, a jiffy, that sort of quick fix element. But yeah, you'll get the pain relief almost instantaneously, and you know this, but the actual deeper changes structurally, emotionally, habitually, mindset, they take a long time. And for me, if we can start by just not putting people in a box,
mm-hmm.
I think it can significantly start to change mental health. It can start changing our human interactions. It can change our consciousness as human beings. Children, I mean, if a child in class stands up on a chair and starts to speak, they're going to be told to sit down, pipe down. It's not normal.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, I was always one of those kids. I was never conventional. And I, even as an adult, in my family, I'm known as the black sheep and I'm known as the rule breaker. And I think it's taken time for people around me to just get used to that.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't come from a place where I'm being dogmatic, I'm being unpleasant, I'm being rude, I'm being hurtful. Mm-hmm. It's just, I know intuitively, and I'm very much led from the body when something feels right. Mm-hmm. My environment, if anyone's done human design, I'm a reflector. And we are 1% of, you know, the human types of the entire population. And I can literally walk in a room and tell whether I belong or whether this is just going to be a momentary pass and I'm out of here in 5 minutes. So by the same token, as a child, if I'm in a classroom and it doesn't vibe with me, I can't learn. And for me, it was only until later life that I understood this. And I found my passion and sort of flourishing moments on the playing field. It was where I could express myself fully. It was where passion and being this character were all sort of welcomed. But in a classroom,
mm-hmm.
we don't want that. We don't want the loud mouth. We don't want the one who sits in the back asking the teacher why. And we are not the person... We're not the kids who, if we like to make sense out of things, we're not very welcome in a classroom environment because we just want, most classrooms want us to just listen, hear, digest, and regurgitate. And I'm not one of those people. So for me, it really does start in the early years.
I love that. I love that. Like, we need to change the generation. We need to change the way we are raising a generation now.
Yeah.
Because everything in our environment, everything that we're buying, like the consumerism industries, like everything is trying to fit us into a box. And right now,
yeah.
Our generation is in the process of unlearning and like peeling off those onion layers, you know, to get back to who we really are and what works for us. What environment works for us?
Yeah.
What are the types of educational institutes that we want our kids to go to, that they can flourish in their being just the way they are.
Yeah.
And as mother, as a mom, it is so complicated.
So complicated.
To find, like, find everything that actually accommodates my child.
Yeah. Puts them on the path of least resistance.
Yeah.
Yeah. I totally get it.
It is a constant discovery path, I feel like, or a constant search as well, right? I heard you say about the kitchen countertops, the desks. What about shoes?
Oh, shoes. I mean, I was in Dubai a couple of years ago, and, you know, fashion state. I kid you not, I couldn't walk into a shoe store. I couldn't. And this is coming from somebody who likes to dress up, but I found my identity in wearing shoes that feel good. And it's a constant. I sometimes I wish I could walk out of my house and just kind of put blindfolds on, because everywhere I go, I see shoes just getting more boxed than not boxed. And as a Kenyan, it bugs me to my bone to see Kenyans, even athletes, who used to run barefoot, now running with modern day footwear, right? And I'm like, how did we get modern society to take over our culture? And for me, this is again where it all comes from, is how strong can we hold in our beliefs of, you know, the earth, and our connection through our feet to this earth is our wellness. We are wearing triangle shaped shoes. You know, I see people telling me all the time, but these shoes are soft and they're like really wide.
Yeah.
And then I take my barefoot shoe sole, and I put it up against the shoe, and you're losing about 20% of our big toe function. Mm-hmm. The shoe is literally the cause of so many of your problems, because you're in shoes 24/7. Children, if you step outside, or if you're, you know, forefathers saw children stepping outside, what's the first thing they say now? Where are your slippers?
Yeah.
Where are your shoes? And I'm like, but why? Why are they not experiencing different textures, different levels? You know, let them find their balance. And as adults, you know, even in the fitness arena, I think it's changing for sure, but there's this huge move on barefoot shoes and the culture of barefoot feet and living. I think it's Thor. What's his actual name? The actor?
No idea.
The actor from Avengers. Anyway, he's basically now known for walking around in Australia with no shoes on.
Wow.
He walks around to the supermarkets in a restaurant with no shoes on. And everybody thinks it's like his way of kind of trying to get into the media. But I'm like, actually, I think that's a great example.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder what it would be like if we as humans walked into a Michelin star restaurant or a top tier hotel, or even into like institutions of like prayer without shoes on. And we do, right? Like
mosque, yeah, we go
in a mandir or in a temple or wherever we go, we don't actually wear shoes.
Yeah.
And Japanese culture, we don't wear shoes in the house either. So I went to Japan on holiday, and for me that was like, wow, yes, please, more of this. And for shoes, I think it's a minefield. When you even start to get curious about barefoot shoes, you know this. It is not just the same as walking into a store, picking out your size fives, and just walking out of the shop. Every brand has a different sizing regime, based on the style of the shoe, based on the need of the shoe. For me, if I'm wearing active shoes, so like workout shoes, I'm a size 6. And when I used to wear conventional shoes, I was only a 5. That sizing has changed now. I wear a 6.5, UK sizing, in my barefoot shoes. So my feet have changed because of my bunion sort of correction. The length of my foot has lengthened, but it hasn't actually. And my sister, throughout my life, has always had bigger feet than me. I can't fit into her shoes. And my mom is like, she literally just can't believe it, because she's like, how is this happening? And I'm like, it happens. But if you think about the foot, it's still got muscles, mm-hmm. connective tissue, it's got bones, and quite a few bones. People just look at toes and think, yeah. 27 bones in just the foot itself.
Wow.
Right? And if you think of the Achilles and the sole of your foot, it has the thickest line of what we call fascia in the body, because that's where a lot of the ruggedness and the rigidity and the sort of wear and tear happens in mm-hmm. your body. It's your feet. And so if we're leaving this completely disregarded, I feel like that's the biggest disservice you'll do to your body even to start with. And I even look at people, I look at how rigid their toes have become. Mm-hmm. And if I say to people, okay, let's try and move just the big toe in isolation, they look at me like I'm talking a different language, but their body cannot do it. Yeah. Right? So like they've lost that connection to the feet through the brain and their motor centers. And for me, that's the biggest worry.
Yeah, and I'm one of them. I'm still like a recovering person, and my toes are still recovering in that sense as well.
And as a pregnant woman and as a mother, at some point you don't have control over gravity. Like, you don't know in which direction that baby's gonna grow and the tummy's gonna go. Yeah. And literally the sides of your body and your feet are holding you in that dynamic tension or not. Yeah. Right? So how many women will complain about plantar? You get really deep sort of vein sort of issues in the lower legs, compression socks, we're told to wear all of these things. And I'm like, okay, but imagine she just did some basic foot function stuff throughout her life. I'm wondering whether that would have had such a big impact when you started growing that sort of the weight in the front of the body.
Yeah, I love that. And I love that you said about the shoes, how like your sizes changed, right? So it happened with me, like last year I went to my brother's wedding and I had not worn these like wedding shoes for such a long time. And then I'm putting them on and they're not fitting me anymore. And my dad's like, how can your size change? Like, you're an adult now, your feet don't grow. But I'm like, no, dad, I did posture work and my size changed. So then he's like, okay, what's your size now? I was like, I don't really know it. Like, it depends on the style of the shoe. So it was like a 37 size, which is what I would be wearing generally, whether it's sneakers or heels or slippers or whatever.
And it's a one size, right? We have this mentality of like, it doesn't matter the shoe.
And this one was so tight. I was like, I can't even walk in this anymore. And now anyone that is traveling and wants to buy shoes for me, they're like, what's your size? I was like, please don't buy, because I don't know if I'm a 37, 38 or 39, because it depends on the kind of shoes I'm wearing. 100%. Like, some I'm 38, some I'm 39. And if I'm still wearing the conventional ones, then I'm moving to 37, right? And the whole mindset has to shift here. And that was so hard because I love fashion.
Yeah.
So when I saw those barefoot shoes for the first time, I'm like, oh my God, they're ugly.
Yeah.
Because I feel like, oh my God, I'm so conditioned to see shoes a certain way.
Yeah.
And when I'm seeing something that is different, my mind is not able to accept it. And it automatically terms it as ugly because it's not looking the way that I've been trained to look at shoes.
You're like me. I love to dress up. I like to feel good and wear things that make me feel good, and we should never have to stop doing that. But the fact that consumerism is what drives us, for me, I think that's also where we need to sort of check in with ourselves and just be like, wow, when did only buying certain types of shoes become my identity?
Yeah. And we're slaves. We're literally slaves to the trends that they're creating, to the sizes that they're creating. I remember I went to Artisanal Gallery for this event, and everyone was just like, I can't fit to the smallest of the smallest size available. And some people can fit into the largest size available. And I'm like, yeah, we're actually just like puppets. They create because it makes sense for them, because they want to create in large quantities. Yeah. And we have to squeeze our bodies, lose weight, starve ourselves, or shove food in our mouth so we can gain weight, so that we can fit into clothes or shoes, or buy a bag that looks good on us because of a certain body type.
I call it the square peg, round hole mentality.
Yeah.
And it's sad.
Yeah, it's really sad. And I'm so glad that we are creating the awareness now. And I hope, even if that can help one person change their life.
And you know, this isn't even like righteous. And I'll give people a very solid example. I play golf and I play paddle. Mm-hmm. I have tried barefoot trainers for golf. They don't work. It's too slippery. We live in a tropical country. Morning dew is a very real thing.
Yeah.
And the materials and the rigidity in barefoot shoes at the moment, I don't think it's in a place where it can keep up. We need specific studs because there's a lot of torque and turning in golf. And paddle, the surfaces that we play on, when I used to wear my barefoot shoes, I was slipping all over the court.
Mm.
I would have risked injury. I wasn't free on the court to move in a way that allowed me to play freely. So I have basically decided that in certain situations, it's okay if I can't wear barefoot shoes. And the reason for that is a barefoot shoe isn't going to fix your problems.
That's what I was going to say,
right?
Next.
It's not going to fix the problem. It's like, it's going to be a band-aid solution, but it's going to facilitate the work that you do in your posture work, in your movement, in the specifics and the work that you do to fix your fundamentals. So if I'm having to wear golf shoes and paddle shoes that are not barefoot shaped for about 3 or 4 hours a week, I don't believe it's going to kill me. I don't believe it's going to set me back 15 years of the work that I've put in to fix myself. I have to also meet my life where it's at, and I have to meet the industry where it's at. The one thing I think is very interesting for me is when I look at the companies that are making non-barefoot shoes, Nike, mm-hmm. Adidas, all of these other shoe companies.
We're calling out names now.
And I don't mean it in a bad way, right? Like, as in if I needed to buy a pair of Nike, yeah. I would. The thing I'm always interested in is, who's making these shoes? Who's designing them?
Mm-hmm.
And do these people have physiological knowledge of the human body? And if that were to change again, I think we would have a drive from those companies who have really big footprints in the world to start driving this change. Because
mm-hmm.
us as individuals and us as movements in this kind of space, it's very difficult. It's like a David and Goliath battle. And that would be very interesting for me to sort of sit in a board or, you know, be a fly on the wall in a boardroom of how is this shoe designed, from who designed it to what experience they have with the body, to know then the thought process that goes into making these shoes.
It's so good that you've put it out there, because now it's in the universe.
Yeah,
it's going to come back to you.
You know, I used to feel scared to name drop and say this doesn't work for me and this isn't right for me. And it's not. It's not about bashing. You know, it's not about that. I could look at weightlifters and be like, oh, what are they doing? And I think in my personal growth journey, I have been through phases where I used to do that. You know, be a snob, like walk into a gym and be like, oh, what are these guys doing? But I think it's also the realization that, one, when you point a finger at someone, there's three fingers pointing back at you. So there's always reflection. But also, if those people weren't doing what they were doing, how would we learn?
True.
Right? So if Nike weren't making shoes, how would we have ever known the shoe that we like versus the shoe that we don't like, or the shoe that works for us and the shoe that doesn't work for us? So these things are giving us learning lessons, and it's about the interpretation that you have and the intention that you have when you say things like that.
It's so interesting that on the healing journey, like, a lot of us get that ego sometimes, and we get cocky, like, oh, I know I'm better than this person, or like, I know better.
Guilty.
Yeah, we all are guilty, because I feel like that's the first, that, like, you know, when you peel a layer, there's another layer to peel. So I feel like that's the layer that gets peeled off as you're stepping up, and then you have to peel that layer off when you actually realize that, hey, it's you and your journey. You're not here to judge people or feel like you're better than them. Everyone has their own journey in their own times. So thank you for bringing that up. And as we wrap up, you've given us such valuable information. And for all the viewers and listeners, what is the next step for them?
First, I think, like I've said, you know, during our chat, is don't overthink. Cut out the noise. Spend some time just learning what you like, and go more in the direction of what drives you every day, rather than going against the grain. It could be swimming, it could be whatever it is. And that will give you some insight to really finding yourself. Because then when you find the reason you're doing something, you have an intention and you will start to develop consistency. the second and the easiest lowest hanging fruit would be your feet. I think if I've said that your body's first connection with this earth is through your feet, logic would have it that that would be a great place to start. It's not, it doesn't have to be a lot. Just start by wriggling your toes, noticing your feet, noticing anything that feels a little bit different or a little bit odd or feels good. Feet, I think, could be a really great place to start for every single human. And the third for me is be curious. Don't ever stop asking questions. Don't ever stop exploring or discovering. And I think from a place of curiosity, you'll naturally start to kind of open yourself up to solutions, answers, and avenues that you can get what it is that you need.
So guys, you know where to start on your journey to getting your posture straight, not straight, actually aligned. And if you are a high performance mom and you're in my self-care club, then you are gonna get a chance to get all your questions answered by Rachna herself. And if you are in my self-care club, which is a membership community for high performance women, you get more access to Rachna with a Q&A session that is going to be exclusive for the members. More details on the self-care club are in the description below. Okay, so just to add a little fun to this podcast that had so much valuable information, I'm going to ask you some questions, which is going to be in the form of a rapid fire round.
Okay.
And if you do well, you get a surprise.
Oh, I love a challenge. Here we go.
Okay, so what is your one non-negotiable wellness habit daily?
Posture work.
What's your life mantra?
It's always from the inside out.
Okay. Bollywood or Afro?
Oh, that's a tough one. It's very mood dependent.
Mm-hmm.
But in my heart, I wish they could kind of merge the two.
You can, but actually.
But being Kenyan, I think maybe Afro.
Okay. Cardio or strength?
Oh, it's so funny. I think if you'd asked me that like 10 years ago, it would have been cardio. Strength.
Sitting on a chair or on a floor?
Floor.
Journaling on paper or on an app?
Oh, pen and paper, girl.
Herbal tea or green smoothie?
Green smoothie.
And the last one, sunrise hike or sunset yoga session?
Sunset yoga.
Okay, and the last one now is, what is the one piece of advice you would give our listeners or viewers?
Be you and do you.
Thank you so much. That was really good and fun.
Yay!
thank you for coming. Thank you for being so open in the conversation. I really appreciate your presence, and I'm sure everyone that listens is going to learn something today.
Well, actually, I think the thanks goes to you. Your courage to speak up, your courage to be curious, your courage to self-discover. I think it's going to make an impact on so many people.
Oh,
and I'm grateful,
so grateful
for you.
Thank you. So
thank you.
I have the surprise for you because you did really well.
Oh, this is so lovely.
I hope you like it, and they're all right up your alley because they're all wellness products, natural.
Love it.
And
thank you.
Help you in your wellness journey. Yeah.
It's lovely. I like the packaging.
Oh, beautiful. You're welcome. Special shout out to our gift hamper partners, the Natural Moms Company, Lelu Botanics, and Alchemy and Frequency. Thank you so much, guys, for joining me for another episode of Wellness Deconstructed. Don't forget to like, comment, share, and subscribe, because your support means everything to me. Until next time, keep prioritizing your well-being.